Casey, a lover of the Bible, would have been intrigued by the passages in Jeremiah dealing with the Lord's wrath with the ruler of Babylon, which, boasted Saddam Hussein, was no other than he. Accordingly, in the book of Jeremiah, the Lord said, "Therefore, hear ye the counsel of the Lord that he hath taken against Babylon and his purposes. Surely the least of the flock shall draw them out. At the noise of the taking of Babylon, the earth is moved, and the cry is heard among the nations. For Israel hath not been forsaken, nor Judah of his God, of the Lord of hosts. Though their land was filled with sin against the Holy One of Israel. We would have healed Babylon, but she is not healed. Forsake her, and let us go every one into his own country. For her judgment reacheth into heaven, and lifted up even to the skies. Her captains, and her rulers, and her mighty men, they shall sleep a perpetual sleep, and not wake, saith the King, whose name is the Lord of hosts. The broad walls of Babylon shall be utterly broken, and her gates burned with fire, and the people shall labor in vain, and the folk in the fire, and they shall be weary. Thus Babylon sink, and shall not rise from the evil that I will bring unto her." Casey made no such predictions himself. They seemed superfluous. Back a lifetime ago, Casey was asked about the significance of the year 1998. As he did so often, he said it would be a period of gradual change, with man beginning to realize his potential on a number of fronts, scientific as well as scriptural. He was obviously seeking to dispel the fears cast by the doomsayers, downplaying any great turmoil for the millennium. He said, "In 1998, we may find a great deal of the activities as have been wrought by the gradual changes that are coming about. These are at the periods when the cycle of the solar activity, the years related to the sun's passage through the various spheres of activity, are pertinent to the change between the Piscean and the Aquarian age. This is a gradual, not a cataclysmic activity in the experience of the earth in this period." In Revelations, in a reference to Armageddon, the ultimate battleground between good and evil, Casey saw a positive victory for the forces of good, with an awakening in the new age of the best elements in people, amid a peaceful revolution that will find jaded, self-serving rulers replaced by crusading leaders from the ranks of the people. He elaborated, "As to those things that deal with the mental of the earth, these shall call upon the mountains to cover many. As ye have seen those in lowly places raised to those in power in the political, in the machinery of the nation's activities, so shall ye see those high places reduced, and calling on the waters of darkness to cover them. And those that in the inmost recesses of themselves awaken to the spiritual truths that are to be given, and those places that have acted in the capacity of teachers among men, the rottenness of those that have ministered in places will be brought to light, and turmoils and strifes shall enter. And as there is the wavering of those that would enter as emissaries, as teachers, from the throne of life, the throne of immortality, and wage war in the air with those of darkness, then know ye the Armageddon is at hand. For with the great numbers of the gathering of the hosts of those that have hindered and would make for man and his weaknesses stumbling blocks, they shall wage war with the spirits of light that come into the earth for this awakening, that have been and are being called by those of the sons of men into the service of the living God. For he, as ye have been told, is not the God of the dead, not the God of those that have forsaken him, but those that love his coming, that love his association among men, the God of the living, the God of life, for he is life." For America specifically, Casey had a premonition of the spiritual awakening that would be influenced by John Peniel, blessed by El God, named in Genesis, who he may have seen as the resurrected Christ reborn with the renovation of the millennium. He slips in the stunning revelation under the guise of a question. "Who," he asks, shall proclaim the acceptable years of the Lord in him that has been born in the earth in America. Those from that land, where there has been a regeneration, not only of the body, but the mind and the spirit of men, they shall come and declare that John Peniel is giving to the world the new order of things, not these that have been proclaimed and have been refused, but that they are made plain in the minds of men, that they may know the truth, and the truth, the light, will make them free. It seemed inconceivable that such a revelation could have been made by any prophet, particularly so devout a Christian as Casey, without some preface that would break such earth-shaking news. "I have declared this," said Casey. "That has been delivered unto me to give to you that sit here and that hear and see a light breaking in the east, and have heard, have seen thine weaknesses and thine fault findings, and know that he will make thy path straight, if ye will but live that ye know this day. Then may the next step, the next word, be declared unto thee. For ye in your weakness have known the way through that which ye have made manifest, if the spirit of the truth and light that has been proclaimed into this earth, that has been committed into the keeping of him that made of himself no estate, but who brought into being all that ye see manifest in the earth, and has declared this message unto thee. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and the second is like unto it. Love thy neighbor as thyself." Who is thy neighbor? Him that ye may aid in whatsoever way that he, thy neighbor, thy brother, has been troubled. Help him to stand on his own feet. For such may only know the acceptable way. The weakling, the unsteady, must enter into the crucible and become as naught, even as he, that they may know the way. As Casey prophesied increasingly with the millennium, communication would be quickened to the point where people in the other side of the world would be as accessible, except for bodily contact, as the next-door neighbor. The laser beams geared to carry messages and pictures around the world with the speed of light. Casey was constantly asked where and when the Messiah of the millennium would reappear, indicating a growing rise of spirituality in the hearts of the American people. He was always encouraging, for he envisioned in dreams the Master's presence as the connecting link between peace and war, with the decisive force no longer the Holy Land. These, then, are those conditions as may be expected. The spirituality of the American people will be rather as a criterion of that which is to become the world's forces. For as has been, to Casey, in that of the peace table, there sat the master in the American people, with the brotherhood of the world accepted. War was at an end. Without saying, there will again come the Armageddon. And in the same, there will be seen that the Christian forces will again move westward. With America, the new center of spirituality, as long as it pursued the tenets laid down by Christ and the Lord. Chapter 11. The Aquarian Age. What will the Aquarian Age mean to mankind as regards physical, mental, and spiritual development? "You think this can be answered in one word?" asked Edgar Casey. After a slight pause, he added, "These are as growing pains from the Piscean Age. In the center of same, the Aquarian had the entrance of Emmanuel, the Christ, or God among men. Now, with the Aquarian, we have the full consciousness of the ability to communicate with, or to be aware of, the relationships to the creative forces and uses of same. This awareness, misused during the era in Atlantis, brought destruction to man because of his selfishness." The answer was not what this 39-year-old man was seeking, to heal his pain over the tragic end of a young woman he adored. Was he being selfish? He didn't think so. He had lost his soulmate, and life was empty without her. And what of this Aquarian Age, with all its promise of a great life and happy days? Somewhat disgruntled, he asked, "Why is the Aquarian Age described as the Age of the Lily?" "Purity. The purity it represents in man will comprehend the awareness that belongs to those who seek the way." It was not time for him to understand, but what Casey was saying was becoming plain. What of the young woman who had left? Was he thinking of her, or only himself? The Aquarian Age was an age of expectation, of hope and revolution, of inventiveness, creation, and new life for those who were at one with the Lord. This was the age of the beginning, the new and fuller life, not necessarily confined in this solar system. The man was confused. How could anyone so young, so beautiful, so loved, choose to die? "Death is but a passing in and a passing out," Casey said, "for these are not the activities of individuals who look on the earth as the center of its activities, but of the soul. For that which caused the separation of souls from the universal consciousness came not in the sphere of materiality, but in that of spirit." "This increased awareness," said Casey, "was all part of the new Aquarian Age, casting its first shadow in the year 1975. In that age, the new race is coming. The children belonging to that generation will be very inquisitive and very bright, brighter than their parents." The author had noticed that the children of that period seemed to be more sensitive and alert than some born in previous generations. But he put this down to home television, which gave youngsters a greater awareness, and the use of computers, which a 12-year-old child seemed to manage better than himself. Casey had some original notions of his own on that score. "Now why is it that people feared God all these centuries, and now they don't? Suppose you have a son, 3 or 4 years old. He isn't afraid of anything. When he grows up, say, 8 years old, to about 14 years old, he is taught to obey for fear of punishment. When the children are 18 years of age, they don't fear their parents. They begin to love them. They are grown up at 18. The next generation will be grown up at 21, in the light of spiritual evolution. The fear of God, just waiting to catch you or punish you, appeals to the child mind. Do not fear God, but love God. Do not fear death, but conscience. The next generation will be coming on Earth and will not be fooled when the Aquarian Age fully arrives in 1998 as a tune-up for the millennium. It will be a matter-of-fact generation. It will not believe in blind faith, but in scientific facts, and demand a new religion of love and freedom from dogmas and misconceptions. Looking ahead to the millennium, Casey saw more Aquarian influence in the people he counseled than any other astrological sign. 3,000 Aquarian aspects in the 14,000 readings he gave. For the most part, he saw Aquarians as strong-minded, resourceful, interested in people. They were the greatest of crusaders. He spoke often of President Franklin Roosevelt taking a tight hold on the country, bringing his New Deal to the common man. He saw the Aquarius leaders fashioning the New Age as a manifestation of their sign, so often spearheading the revolutions characteristic of Aquarius with force and social reforms that helped create and shape a new kind of world. All one has to do is look at the nation's history, beginning with George Washington. Calendar revisions of his birth reveal him as Aquarian rather than Pisces. As for Lincoln, Casey frequently mentioned him as the greatest Aquarian of all, with a strength and kindness of humility and reverence for the Lord, almost Christ-like. A leader who, like Christ, Casey pointed out, was crucified with an assassin's bullet for what he did to free the slaves and bind the nation's wounds. Casey thought of all of this as he was reading for an Aquarian in a family crisis. Someone he saw had the strength, harmony, and understanding where many another might break. In his unconscious state, he saw that she had the strength and purpose to control the pressing problems confronting her, and the wisdom. As to the influences that arise from the astrological sojourns, These are rather in keeping with the time. The Aquarian forces, and as there are the beginnings of the Aquarian age. The reading was unusual, for he was looking decades ahead, though, as he said, the Aquarian age took years maturing before its advent in 1998. In encouraging a younger woman, an Aquarian, he said, realizing her strengths. Do not consider self as being unusual, because unusual experiences arise in thy associations, in thy meditations, in thy activities with thy fellow man. Do not do other than contemplate. He paused, hesitated a moment, then delivered his shocker. Remember, thou art in the same signs, omens, as the mother of him that gave to the earth the physical man, Jesus. Aquarius, in its perception. Perfection. The woman sat still for a moment, hearing her own breathing, unable to speak. Casey went on. When those experiences arose in that life, it was said, she pondered these in her heart. Hence, the same injunction might be given today, for no better direction can be had or given than the consecrating of self in body, in mind, in activity, to the service of that influence, those forces that the self may give to others in the meditations, the supplications, keeping self in those directions that indeed are as he gave. Ye abide in me, I in the Father, and ye may know those forces from the abiding presence of the Master. Jess Stern wondered how Casey had known that Mary, the mother of Christ, was an Aquarian. The world knew Jesus as a Capricorn, but many felt he was a perfect Aquarian, embracing the world, and that the ancients were mistaken on his birthday, December 25th being the established date. February 6th, the date of a special constellation, was the choice of some astronomers, who related the latter date to the three magi, three astrologers, who had followed the course of Jesus' star to Bethlehem. Casey soon indicated how the Holy Mother's birthday was known to the woman he was advising some 2,000 years after the event. The entity, he said, was among those, or that one, that would be termed as the waiting maid with Elizabeth, mother of John the Baptist, and with Mary, when each were heavy with child. At their meeting, when there was the awareness of that as was to come to the pass, the entity then was that one that blessed them both and made those prophecies as what would be the material experience of each in the earth. Then in the name Anna, the entity waited in the preparations for the maidens who consecrated their love for this expectancy in those periods. Hence, the entity was then known as a seeress, a prophetess, and is one in the present that may find innate experiences coming through voices, through sounds as of music, through the rushing of mighty winds. But know, my child, their source when such things come to pass. It would have been good to be present when the young woman with Casey heard of her past. It must have come like a thunderbolt that she should have been that close, past life or not, to the figures she had revered from childhood. That past in her thinking and her Aquarian nature now dictated the activities that made her of help to others, giving her the strength to deal with her own problems brought on by her youth and beauty. Those activities, said Casey, will enable the entity to counsel those who seek to know the experiences of every nature pertaining to a soul movement or activity. Hold not to things of the flesh or of the earth, but to that as thou didst give in assisting not only those mothers, but the young women, the maidens of that blessed day. For thy counsel gave strength to many. Abide ye in that strength that may keep thee first, and may aid thee in counseling others. Casey saw that the young woman had such concern for the purification of her body that it was almost an obsession in the present. These are well, he enjoined. But remember those forces as he gave. That which cometh from the body, not that which goeth and defileth same. That which is the expression of thy relationships, keep. For not faith alone, but works of faith, make for the proper purifying, the proper concentrating, the proper relationships. She was brimming with questions, as who wouldn't be? But none dealt with her service with the two famous cousins, Mary and Elizabeth. Instead, she referred to the prospects of her current life. Have I any healing power? If so, how may I develop it? By raising those vibrations within self to the consciousness of the Christ force and giving it out through the hands and through the thoughts. The next question showed more of her dedication, possibly springing out of a hazy past. For what did I come into this plane at this time? Casey saw in this life a continuation of the preparation of the past, though not as mind-boggling. To be the aid, the help, to many that are seeking their way through the earth's experience at this time. Not for self, then, but others, that their strength might be increased, that thy own glory and power may be the stronger in him. Hold fast to that trust in him, as ye read the 14th chapter of St. John. As ye read in Luke, thy blessings in the temple, there will be given thee much that is beyond words here. This was not an ordinary reading. The author understood that he pored over it long, with gratitude in his heart for the privilege of having touched on the lives of those close to the heart of the master he venerated. The Aquarian age was very special to Casey. He saw the hope of the world brimming out of the rise of spirituality he foresaw with the dawning of the millennium. He equated spirituality with oneness with the Lord, the Creator, the essence for our being. As he saw the Aquarian age, it was an evolution in part of the development of the whole universe, not just this consciousness of our own solar system, but of all solar force, of which our system is only a mere part of the whole consciousness. But in the earth and man's awareness of the three-dimensional consciousness, only those that have known same may lead same through the awareness of their being, those influences, through their various spheres of activity, including not only the earthly sojourns, but the sojourns throughout the spheres of activity when they are absent from a physical consciousness. He was asked whether he was speaking about his rebirth. He replied, "What does the word say?" Meaning Christ speaking of everlasting life. "He has not willed that any soul shall perish, but has with each temptation, with each condition that has risen within the experience of the soul, prepared a way. These being a constant change being wrought, not that through activities, but it is ever as the voice of the individual. It is that which creates the godly force within an individual, or a soul, that makes it seek its level. He, the way, the sun, showed in materiality the ability to become one with the creative forces as to pronounce his atonement with the Father God. And so may all men, as he gave." Some of the talk about the Aquarian age was cryptic, but Casey's replies were nearly always open and the same, that whatever proceeded out of the milesore energy of man should be constructive. He was asked, "Is it gradually becoming possible through the restoration of phosphorus that man will talk back and forth with the cosmos, the heavens, like the radio principle?" Phosphorus, in Greek biblical times, stood for light or illumination, or in modern context, the humble matchhead, which people often strike when they are in darkness and need light. "What," the man pursued, "does the restoration of phosphorus signify?" Familiar with the expression, in his subconscious state, Casey quickly applied it to the Aquarian age with its emphasis on universal awareness. The relationship of the individual to that awareness of the universal consciousness should be the promise of all who put their faith in him. For as he has given, "He that abideth in me and I in him, to him will be made aware of all things." This is all there in his words, in his promises to man. Just as indicated in his exhortation upon the activities of John, the apostle, as to what they meant in the affairs of man. And yet when individuals, even as John, become aware of being within the presence of life itself, God himself made manifest how few accepted it. Only those who accept saying will become aware of what's going on about them. How few realized the vibratory forces as great influences from even one individual to another when they are in the same vibratory force or influence. And yet ye ask, what will the Aquarian age bring in mind, body, experience? Casey had more to say about the restoration of phosphorus. It is interesting to note that phos is a Greek word meaning light. The word is used in the New Testament as in John. In him was light, life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. He had dug deep into his inner self. He sighed and said, I am through. UFOs, unidentified flying objects, were very much a conceptual part of Edgar Casey's vision of the Aquarian Age. Flying was something man had wanted to do since the beginning of time, and now it was being done, with or without man. Many people came to him troubled by some unexplained craft they had seen in the skies, usually at night, and he listened closely in his sleep, for he had some experience with them himself. One night, some weeks ago, this man was saying a little sheepishly, I saw floating above my head in space an exceedingly bright sphere or planet. It seemed to be moving within itself as well as through space. Please interpret this for me, if you will. Nothing surprised Casey. He saw immediately it was not a shooting star, an airplane, or a figment of the man's imagination. It was, he said, without thinking what a shock it might be, a visitation from another planet on an exploratory journey from a lesser planet. As given, he said, these individuals are reaching that period, that place in their experience, where the consciousness becomes more and more aware of the very lessons and truths being given out to manifest in the experience of selves and others. So, in the vision seen, it is the world without and the world within. The consciousness within self becomes more and more aware. Their movements as one coordinating with the other, the brightness of the orb itself that makes for the light, the understanding, the enlightenment that is obtained from within. Well was it said by him, ye do not light a lamp to put it out under a bushel. Casey saw the light as a good omen, whether a UFO or a shooting star. When there is that consciousness within of being more and more in accord with the light that shineth even unto the darkness, though there may come strifes, though there may come disappointments, though there may come turmoils from without and within, yet his peace maketh for harmony with that cooperation of the personality, the individuality of self and thy God. How, the man inquired, could he bring himself closer to the Lord? He was sorely troubled, and the light, he feared, may have been a warning, given that it could have been a message of a UFO. Casey was reassuring. He had seen flying saucers himself, without seeing anything ominous in them. Well aware of the limitless planets in God's universe, he thought it flattering that they may have had some interest in humble man, who knew so little of his origin or where he was going. Let that light that shines without be lighted by that light which is created from within, making the activities of the inner self and the outer self in accord. Or let that seen of others be impelled by the light from the love of the giver of life, light, and immortality. The man was still troubled. Is there no other way given among men whereby they may be saved? Saved from what? Only from themselves. That is their individual hell. They dig it with their own desires. Look to yourself and the God within you. His light will shine brighter than any light to be seen in the sky. Flying saucers, or UFOs, glimpsed in the night sky, had no mystery for Casey. In reading for a man he saw as an Atlantean, he spoke of a life in another land where the manners of transportation, the manners of communications through the airships of that period, were such as Ezekiel described at a much later date. The description of the Old Testament's book of the prophet Ezekiel was something even a casual reader of the Bible was struck by. It was picturesque and graphic. His planes had wheels and wings, cabins and pilots who maneuvered the craft with the skill of modern aviators. The prophet's portrayal was chilling. For if he could be so explicit some thousands of years ago, the end of times predicted by the prophet Daniel may have long come and gone. The airport must have been an unusual one to harbor all the planes and the array of pilots. Ezekiel was a great reporter, missing little in the nature of detail. And when the living creatures, the pilots, went, the wheels went by them. And when the living creatures were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up. Whithersoever the spirit was to go, they went, and the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels. And the likeness of the firmament above the heads of the living creature was as the color of the terrible crystal, stretched forth over their heads above. And under the firmament were their wings straight, the one toward the other. Everyone had two, which covered on this side, and everyone had two, which covered on that side, their bodies. And when they went, I heard the noise of their wings, like the noise of great waters, as the voice of the Almighty, the voice of speech, as the noise of an host. When they stood, they let down their wings. And there was a voice from the firmament that was over their heads when they stood, and had let down their wings. As the appearance of the rainbow that is in the clouds in the day of rain, so was the appearance of the brightness round about. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And when I saw it, I fell upon my face, and I heard a voice of one that spoke unto me. Jess Stern marveled at the eloquence of the prophet. Or was this another episode in the never-ending recycling of a world that has no beginning and no end? One man had the answer. Edgar Casey, the sleeping prophet. Chapter 12. God the Astrologer. With the millennium coming, around swarms of psychics and astrologers are making all kinds of predictions of millennial disasters. They see wars in the Middle East, the Balkans, Africa, Tibet, wherever wars rage over slips of land and religious or racial differences. Edgar Casey's voice is now silent, but his words live on. Yes, there would be wars here and there, he saw, but the United Nations, led by the United States, would put the quietus on the still prevailing threat. The Iraq leader, Saddam Hussein, continuing the struggle that the fallen leader, former President Bush, left unfinished. There would be trouble in Asia, with China continuing to flex its muscles, and this would be resolved. There would be the mystical presence Casey had talked about, with people everywhere saying they had experienced a visitation from Jesus, whereas Casey visualized Christ's millennial manifestation in the hearts of people who crossed racial and religious lines to glorify his brotherhood. Some of the flavor of biblical times would be restored as astrology, flourishing in Moses' time, would be revived in a new epoch where whole peoples would banish hatred and hostility from their hearts, even to a resolution of the end of the festival of hate between people of the same race in Ireland. And then wondering people could say with some justification that the sleeping prophet was right, at least figuratively, when he said that Christ would be striding into a new and better millennium. Casey savored the days of the ancient prophets, who made warnings of their prophecies, so much as he did. For didn't the Old Testament, the Bible of Isaiah and Elijah, say that the mighty Philistine warrior Sisera struggled mightily against the stars to no avail, his death foreshadowed by the planets? Casey was no astrology buff. He didn't conduct his psychic readings with astrology charts at his elbows. Yet he wouldn't have been the psychic he was if he didn't realize that the cosmic rays impact the speck of Earth known quaintly as the world. He didn't have to read the astronomers Kepler or Copernicus or Einstein to know that we were in an infinite universe of many solar systems, subject to the laws of the Creator who put us here. As Casey believed, nothing happened out of nothing and without reason. His unique metaphysical mind, tying in with the universal intelligence, had long ago told him of an order in the universe with which man, cast in God's image, what he wanted us to be, was an integral part, given the free will to make a success or a failure of his life. To be a giver as well as a taker, a help to others, and not their oppressor. And even more, to keep our minds open so we could grow with love of the Lord, not mock those who experienced his greatness. Since it was all too apparent, we couldn't live without the environment he had created for our development. So with all humility and logic, Casey was asked, why do we ignore the planets God created with the sun, the ruler, and the moon, the fair lady? He replied, he has given thee a mind, a body, an earth and a land in which to dwell. He has set the sun, the moon, the planets, the stars about thee to remind thee, even as the psalmist gave. Day unto day uttereth speech, night unto night showeth knowledge. And yet how must the Savior feel when thee deny his day? Casey seemed to know more about the planets than our scientists, whose quest for greater knowledge of the heavenly bodies was linked to the eternal mystery. He was asked, are any of the planets in our solar system, other than the Earth, inhabited by human beings or animal life of any kind? His answer, no. The first test, the moon. There were no greeting parties rushing to welcome our astronauts to their abode. The expedition to Mars was confined to a satellite rover, which had the planet pretty much to itself. Yet Mars had as much energy and influence as any of the planets, and, like the moon, contributed to our language. The moon, the inspiration of countless love songs, and Mars, the symbol of military might. We looked at them so often, they were like old friends. Casey rarely ducked a question on astrology. He was asked, do the planets have anything to do with the ruling of the destiny of man? If so, what? And what do they have to do with this body? There is some connection, he replied. In the beginning, our own planet, Earth, was set in motion. The placing of the other planets began the ruling of the destiny of all matter as created, just as the division of the waters was and is ruled by the moon in its path about the Earth. The strongest power in the destiny of man is the sun, then the closer planets, or those coming into ascendancy at the time of the birth of the individual. But let it be understood, no action of any planet or any of the phases of the sun, moon, or any of the heavenly bodies surpass the rule of man's individual will, the power given by the Creator of man in the beginning when he became a living soul, and the faculty of choosing for himself. The author was intrigued by Casey's interest in astrology. He makes no case for astrology himself, being neither for nor against it. Yet he has been impressed with some of the other things astrologers can do, and with some of their clients who were not the kind of people to do anything off the beaten path unless they profited by it. In another generation, Evangeline Adams, the dean of astrologers and descendant of two American presidents bearing their name, counseled princes of finance like the elder J.P. Morgan, the railroad baron James J. Hill, and the newspaper magnate William Randolph Hearst on their financial matters. Astrology intruded even in politics. In 1966, during a heated California gubernatorial campaign, Governor Edmund Pat Brown accused Republican Ronald Reagan of using astrology to beat him. Reagan, an Aquarian, merely smiled and kept blasting away as if victory was assured. And so it was. After his election, Governor Reagan was inaugurated at an unusual hour, just after midnight. But when astrology was mentioned, the former actor and president-to-be merely smiled. Years later, when he was president, the newspapers tried to make a scandal of a president and a first lady using astrology. Nobody seemed to get stirred up but Reagan's political adversaries. The voters were too busy having their charts done by the neighboring astrologer. Casey may have been aware of it, because he seemed to be aware of everything, that large corporations, as well as individuals, have made considerable use of astrology, though some call it astrophysics, astrodynamics, astral cycles. RCA Communications, concerned about its shortwave radio messages, employed technician John Nelson to plot charts anticipating disruptive magnetic storms. They wouldn't call it astrology, though Nelson's storm warnings all hinged on the influence of the planets. An electrical marvel, David Williams, cable purchasing manager of the New York utility Consolidated Edison, turned astrologer to anticipate periodic power slumps attributed to changing planetary aspects, and bought miles of costly cable at depressed prices while unwitting superiors wondered at his business acumen. Williams not only plotted the price trends of commodities and the stock market, but did birth charts for many companies. For Philip Morris, he correctly predicted a stock rise in a falling market in early 1970, and similarly advised officials of the New York Telephone Company that they would get a rate increase they had applied for. The telephone company, Williams observed, was a Gemini, born on June 18th, and it was ruled by Mercury, the planet of communication. How could it miss? Even the rising popularity of astrology itself was attributed to the planets. For when Uranus, the symbol of the Aquarian Age and of astrology, in 1966 conjoined the planet Pluto, signifying the masses, in Virgo, the sign of service, astrology began its meteoric rise, staging a spectacular comeback after being associated for centuries with the Dark Ages. The ancients, the Greeks and the Romans, used astrology, ascribing various characteristics to the planets, which told Stern more where the ancients were coming from than it did the planets. Casey noted the influence of early mythology, Venus symbolizing love and beauty, which none can deny, Jupiter ennobling force, high ideals, good fortune, breadth of vision, Neptune, mysticism, water, illusion, Uranus, occult, drastic changes, extremes, Mercury, mind, communications, Mars, anger, strife, high energy, Saturn, stabilizing, limiting, teaching, Earth, materialism, with accompanying emotions, the Sun, the source of light and life, the Moon, feminine influences, intuition, romance, fluids, harmony in social relations. Casey had his reservations about astrology, deeming it paramount that man's free will dominate his life. The vibrations from the various planets may at times seem harmful rather than helpful. The completeness and well-roundedness of the necessary experiences are important, for balance in this physical life is but a reflection of the necessary development in the spiritual life. The nobleness of Jupiter without the force of Mars, the love of Venus without the tempering of Mercury, can be dangerous. Man should call on his own inner reserves, he said, to resolve his problems. There lies within him the ability, the power to choose that which signifies a step forward along the path. If one will make an effort, the knowledge of how to use the spiritual advantage, any and all conditions, will be opened from within. We become blinded by the needs we constantly magnify. Fear clutches our heart at the least sign of failure, and through a lack of faith, we lose our inner resolve. One man, he was advising, had not been to a psychic before. He had consulted an astrologer, and mentioned this to Casey before the reading. He was a successful businessman. Like many men who did well with their careers, he had problems with a marriage he had neglected because of his preoccupation with his business. It was a story Casey heard often. "Ye know," he said, "this is something ye must settle within thyself, for only ye can make the decision in thine own heart which is more important to you." "I have my children to think of," the man said. "I have to give them an education and launch their lives. I have to provide for them. I brought them on this earth." "It was the Lord who gave them life," rejoined Casey. "Never forget the Creator of all. And what decision you make with your marriage, you make with His help. You alone from within, you are responsible. The choice is yours, for the Lord gave you free will." The man mused a moment. "I have made my own decisions of my life. I chose the wife I wed, now the mother of my children. I chose my profession. I chose the home we live in, and chose the career that made it possible. I have always considered my decisions before I make them, usually listening to the recommendations of people I respect." He paused. "In this way, I chose an astrologer. And," he smiled, "in the same manner, I chose you. The choice was mine, as you say. You see, I wanted a second opinion." The sleeping prophet's lips seemed to part with a smile, his sense of humor never far from the surface. "And ye have been disappointed?" "Not at all," said the businessman. "By and large, you are both in agreement. I need to spend more time with my wife and children." "Your own heart may have told you this, had you considered from whence they came. Remember, the Lord gave ye free will. Ye are the master of what ye think and do. Always remember this. I am through." With his universal mind, Casey postulated the merits and demerits of astrology. "Astronomy is considered a science," he said, "and astrology as a foolishness. One holds that because of the position of the earth, the sun and the planets are balanced one with another in some manner, yet that they have nothing to do with man's life or the expanse of life or the emotions of the physical body being in the earth. Then why and how do the effects of the sun so influence other life on the earth and not affect man's life, man's emotions? As the sun has been set as the ruler of this solar system, does it not appear to be reasonable that it has an effect upon the inhabitants of the earth as well as upon plant and mineral life in the earth? Then, if not, why? How then did the ancients worship the sun as the representative of a continuous, benevolent, and beneficent influence upon the life of the individual? For remember, they, the sun, the moon, the planets, have their marching orders from the divine, and they move in same. Man alone is given that birthright of free will. He alone may defy his God, but only so far. How many of you have questioned your own heart, and know that the disobedience in the earth reflects unto the heavenly hosts, and thus influence that activity of God's command? For you, as sons and daughters of God, defy the living God too long. All the heavenly stars, the sun, are one in the various stages of consciousness, or of activity, for what? Man. Godly man. Yet when these become in defiance to that light which was commanded to march, to show forth the Lord's glory, His beauty, His mercy, His hope, His patience, do ye wonder then that there become reflected upon the face of the sun those turmoils and strifes that are the sin of man? All that was made to show to the sons, the souls, that God is mindful of His children. Jeff Stern had done several books on Casey, coining the phrase, the sleeping prophet. Yet he has never heard or seen anything of his counsel that appeared to be as thorough as this concern for the welfare of his fellow man. It is almost as though he was measuring the turmoil in nature against the behavior in man, and found man wanting. And so, as he did occasionally, He suggested that people take careful note of their everyday behavior. The offense didn't have to be heinous or inhuman for the Lord to be displeased if it was an affront to the humble. How does a cross word affect thee? How does anger, jealousy, hate, animosity affect thee as a son of God? If thou art the father of same, oft ye cherish the same. If thou art the recipient of same from others, thy brethren, how does it affect thee? Much as that confusion which is caused upon the earth by that which appears as the sunspot. The disruption of communications between men is what? These then become the influences that would show a man his littleness in entertaining hate, injustice, or the lie. Be honest with thyself, as thee would even ask the ruler of thy earth, the sun, to hearken to the voice of that which created it, and to give its light irrespective of how ye act. For, as given, the sun shineth upon the just and the unjust alike. Yet it is often reflected in what happens to thee in thy journey through same. Was Casey being carried away by his concern for the good in the world that might be dissipated by those who ran roughshod over the law of one that had been fatal to Atlantis? The more they become aware of thy relationships to the universe and those influences that control same, the greater thy ability to rely upon the God force within, but still greater the responsibility to thy fellow man. For as thee do it to the least, thee do it unto thy Maker. Even as to the sun which reflects those turmoils that arise with thee, even as the earthquake, even as the wars and hates, even as the influences in thy life day by day. Then what are the sunspots? A natural consequence of the turmoil which the sons of God in the earth reflect upon the same. Let not thy hearts be troubled, yet believe in God. Then just act like it to others. Hast thee created hope in thy association with thy fellow man? Yet ye fear and cringe when thee find that the spots upon thy son cause confusion of any nature. He felt the inclinations of man were ruled by the planets under which he was born. In this the destiny of man lies with the sphere or scope of the planets. With the given position of the solar system at the time of the birth of an individual, it can be determined. That is, the inclinations and the actions without the willpower taken into consideration. Jeff Stern thought of the businessman who had exercised free will in going to an astrologer and later consulting Casey. Obviously, he could take the advice or leave it. More free will. Casey had spoken of people consulting the stars long before anyone knew of the cosmic influence on our behavior. For instance, with a full moon, many surgeons postpone an operation for fear of excess bleeding because of the moon's effect on body fluid. Casey thought of astrology as a tool, as something that might be helpful to the individual. He was frequently asked, in what way should astrology be used to help man live better in the present physical plane? He responded as he would to a similar question about the millennium, for he felt the individual reflected an inner uncertainty about what the event would bring. Since the positions of the planets give the tendencies in a given life, then let man, the individual, understand how his will may be altered in any situation. With that God force manifested in the creation of man, dictating the choice between good and evil. Destiny, then, Casey went on, is indeed in the hands of the individual, for he, the Lord, hath given. Though ye be far, if ye call, I will hear. If ye be unto thy brethren, unto thy associates, unto those about thee as a channel of blessings, then he, thy Father, thy God, will direct thee in the ways thou should go. Learn ye, then, to know him as thine own Father, to whom ye may go in joy and in sorrow. In whatever may be thy experience, let thy light, thyself, so shine before thy fellow man that others may know that ye walk oft with him. In speaking of the millennium years before its arrival, Casey saw the era off to a good start because of the New Age planet Uranus in the New Age sign of Aquarius. Uranus brings out those of the spiritual side of life, especially of the motive forces. He thought of Uranus as an active force. It dealt with an area he had been connected with all his life. In Uranus, the activity makes for an interest in those things of the occult or the mystical nature, and these bring the entity off those things that are most helpful. Elsewhere, he said of the Uranus Aquarians, the star children of the millennium, "For the Lord hath not willed that any soul should perish. Thus he gives thee the opportunities to glory in thy association with the living God." And that was most fortuitous, for the outset of the millennium at any rate. He was optimistic. "Ye are today what ye are, because of what ye were on the yesterday. And what ye are today is the shadow of that which will be thy experience on what ye call the morrow. And there would be many tomorrows." Chapter 13, A Message for the Millennium. Your young men shall dream dreams. Your old men shall see visions. Your maidens shall prophesy. Edgar Cayce was very comfortable with what he saw for the millennium. It would be a new world, with some of the old ways of prejudice and ego holding up things for a while, but it would be a world which the Lord would approve. There would be earthquakes in places where the earth was settling itself in a normal way, but as a new brotherhood began to emerge, nations would try to help rather than hinder each other. Unlikely as this might seem as one ponders the current state of affairs around the world, but harmony would come as we got into the millennium. This was Edgar Cayce's promise. This is what he saw, with the return, with his presence, of the one who so often walked alone, and the benign influence of a universal God, whose realm extended to the most distant planets and solar systems. For, as Cayce saw, he was not only the creator, but creation itself, alive in all of us, if we would only open our hearts. For centuries, the prophets of doom had looked to the striking of the New Age as a time of woe, comparable to the eclipse of storied Atlantis, which they saw as a precedent for the downfall of a civilization unable to contain the savage wars and massacres that have marked its history since Adam and Eve ate the apple. However, Edgar Cayce, the greatest mystic and prophet of our time, shrugged, and with a little smile took off his shoes and lay down on a couch, listening to people who were coming to him with concerns over not only their fate, but the fate of their children and grandchildren. He had said time after time that none of the cataclysms and associated horrors would have to occur if man would only listen to the simple commandments coming from Sinai and the lips of Christ and others like Buddha, wise beyond his times. The New Age is as near or as distant as we make it, but will surely come with the millennium. We must prepare ourselves to meet the Redeemer as a bride prepares herself to meet her husband, by being pure, lovable, selfless, self-sacrificing. We cannot enjoy the perfect unless we ourselves are perfect. Is the New Age spiritual or physical? Both. We have first to spiritualize the physical before we can take it with us into spiritual realms. That is what Christ did. He is still the way. The New Age will be no experiment, but a reality, a truth. As Cayce did so often, he then quoted from the Bible, a book he recommended that everybody read. "In that day, the prophet Hosea said of the Lord, I will make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field, and with the fowls of the heaven, and with the creeping things of the ground, and I will break the bow and the sword, and the battle out of the earth, and will make them lie down safely. The great will be at peace with the humble, the weak ones in Christ will be strong. It is now dawn for those who will make themselves ready for the new age. And the fisherman saith unto me, Seal not the sayings of the prophecy of this book, for the time is at hand. He that is unjust, let him be unjust still. He that is filthy, let him be filthy still. He that is righteous, let him be righteous still. And he that is holy, let him be holy still.